Hello and welcome to the 210 Lads podcast. I'm Francis Wade, and if this is your very first time listening, this is where I continue my search for breakthrough ideas in the area of time-based productivity. Most of my shows include interviews of thought leaders and thinkers, but some of them are just opportunities to share some of the latest ideas as I come across them in the course of my work here at 210 Labs. Today's show is one of the first since the publication of my book, Perfect Time-Based Productivity, a unique way to protect your peace of mind as time demands increase. It's available on Amazon.com or at my website, perfect.mytimedesign.com. In today's show, we'll be interviewing Michael Einstein on the issue of email and information overload. We'll be looking at what exists today to help us manage the current flow of information and messages, and what to do in the future, because all we can anticipate is an increase in time demands. So stay tuned. Today's interview is with Michael Einstein. Keep listening. Hi, and welcome back to the 210 Labs podcast. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, today we have a very special guest. Michael Einstein is a specialist in email and information overload, and he's coming to us to spend some time to talk about the challenges that we have in setting up different channels of communication, as I mentioned at the top. Michael, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Francis. Great to be here.
It is great to have you on. I've been a fan of your work and your blog and all the different ways in which you've been providing some thought leadership in this area. And I think it's an area where people really are more at the effect of what's happening around them than they are deliberately making conscious plans. Do you agree?
Absolutely. Yeah, we are often a victims of the communication that is going around us instead of being in control of communication. And that's a big challenge today, especially for people that are in what I call the knowledge worker area, where people primarily working with information and communicating with people on a regular basis.
Right. That's exactly who our listeners are, you know, people who are using new technology to manage and manipulate information. They have a problem with all the time demands that they're creating every day and trying to find ways to manipulate them and not go crazy. But before we get into the first set of questions, why not give our listeners a little bit of an idea of your background?
Sure. So I am I call myself a business technology professional. I work for I've worked for a number of corporations over the years. I'm still a full-time employee of a company. And I've had different roles over my career that have been a blend of kind of business and technology. I've worked for a software company. My background actually started as a database programmer a long time ago, many, many years ago. So I started in technology, and over the years, I've had roles that have blended technology and business, and I currently work for a large pharmaceutical firm where I work in supply chain and logistics there, and am pretty heavily involved in a lot of just very active technology and business processes, and do a lot of business process flow. And my background.
And your... Go ahead.
Yep. No, as I said, in my from an education background, recently I've got a bachelor's in computer science and mathematics. I've got an MBA in business because I was really interested in more the business side than the technical side. I started off early on as a programmer and decided that was not something I wanted to do full time. And then recently, completed my doctorate in business and focused on email systems and email processing and training and email overload. So that's really where I got into this area.
Fantastic. And I think we already established that you don't know of any particular relationship with Albert Einstein. Is that correct? Has there been a change?
It has not been completely established. Our family does, on my father's side, they do go back to Germany, to the same town that Albert Einstein was born in. We have looked. We've never found a hard link linking us to him. And to me, I say that's fine. I have enough pressure in my life already. I don't need the pressure of knowing I'm actually related to Albert Einstein. That's a pressure I'd rather not have.
You have used his picture on your Twitter profile, haven't you?
Yeah, I do have his picture around the house, and it's not always easy with the name growing up, but yeah, absolutely. But
I'm sure even Albert Einstein would have a problem with the email, managing the volume of email that the average person gets. What's that number up to nowadays, Michael?
I'd say that it's been growing regularly. I mean, some of the original studies that were done from some of the were 50, 60 emails a day back in the 80s and 90s. But I'd say right now the current studies have shown that the average business user is getting well over 100, some 200 emails a day. Is not uncommon for many. I'd say generally in the hundreds is seems to be the midpoint for most people. But there are people that do get significantly more. And again, some of that volume is, I'd say, unnecessary and excessive because people are using email in ways that is just not a highly efficient way of using email. So that's something I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, no, I remember. I'm old enough to remember when there was such a thing called email. I can't tell how old you are just from looking at your picture, but I suspect that you and I share that in common.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I was around when it started. My first use of email was way back on Digital Equipment Corp PDP-11s, where you were just sending, just sending, little emails back and forth. And, I was around when really it started to take off in the beginning, where companies like Prodigy and CompuServe and then America Online finally came in and really brought email into the mainstream. I mean, initially it was primarily just used within between mainframe computer systems to send messages back and forth, and eventually with ARPA and some of the other technology, it started connecting different computer systems. But it's really those companies, I'd say CompuServe and things like that really pushed email into the mainstream. And eventually companies jumped on and started building their own big email networks. And obviously, companies like, Microsoft with Exchange became huge over time. Used to be Lotus Notes was big for a while, so they've kind of faded into the background.
Hmm. Is it fair to say that even early adopters, it sounds like you were a pretty early adopter, had no clue what email was about to become back in, I guess that's the early 90s, late 80s?
Yeah, it was still very much a phone and voicemail world when I started working. Email was out there, but it wasn't really a major way that people communicated initially. It was still very much making phone calls and coming in, and it was, I remember coming to work and you weren't looking at what was in your inbox. You were seeing what I call the dreaded red blinking voicemail light, and you get into work and see how many messages you had waiting for you when you came in for the day. It's kind of funny because, that's now changed, and instead of I rarely get voicemail messages anymore. I mean,
same here. Yeah, I mean,
maybe a few a week. Now it's you get up and you're not checking your voicemails. You're checking your email.
Great. It's like we've made all this progress. What has changed exactly? Yeah, and I talk with HR professionals, and the email and other channels have change the way we do business. Before voicemail, I remember when there was, I think I can remember when there was no voicemail. I certainly worked in a few companies as a teenager when there was no such thing as voicemail. Hadn't been rolled out. But over time, these channels have changed the face of corporate America and corporations around the world. And when I talk with HR professionals, I argue that it's one of the biggest culture changes that ever took place in business, but HR professionals, by and large, just didn't know it was happening, were late adopters themselves, and even today don't realize that their whole world has changed, and it all started with email, even more than voicemail. What do you think of that particular point of view? It's one that I repeat, but what do you think?
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. I mean, I think email overtook people's expectations and really became a major force within the business. It allowed companies and individuals to communicate irrespective of time or place or time zone. You could send messages around, anywhere around the world and have them received virtually instantaneously and then people would have the time to, you know, review them and respond. It was originally, heavily focused as an asynchronous communication method where, you know, you'd send a message and then sometime later you'd expect a response. And often it was a day or 2 days or sometimes longer to get response. What's happened with email over the years, and again, you talk about HR, I think, you know, not focusing on this as a real challenge is that timeline of the expectation of the response has compressed to the point where you can almost be having real-time back-and-forth conversations through email, much as I see a lot of the Generation Xers today, you know, use text messages on their phones. But they're using email for that, which is really not a great use of that tool.
Well, but I guess back in our day, before email was around, we also had text messaging, right? I had a beeper.
Oh, absolutely. I used to walk around with two beepers on my belt. I had two pagers.
Ooh, and, two-gun kid.
Yeah, absolutely. One for work and one for home. So, I had one tied into my job that was related to work-related issues, and I had one at home so that my family could get in touch with me because, I wasn't supposed to use the work pager for personal use. So
right. Yes. No, I love yous over that channel.
Absolutely. So and eventually the pagers faded and cell phones became the next tool. So the pagers on the belts were eventually replaced by cell phones.
Right. And I guess we got used to the idea of asynchronous communication. Maybe it started with, well, of course there were letters. And I met a young person the other day. They weren't that young. They were maybe in their 20s. And I had to explain. They knew what a letter was, but I had to explain what a beeper was. They had no idea. They never heard of a beeper.
Tell
them, we used to walk around with these devices on our belts, and all they got was text. And they were looking at, what? They were confused. But over time, I guess originally all we had were letters, and then came the phone, I guess.
Right.
And then came voicemail, so you could then practice asynchronous electronic communication. And then came beepers, and then came email, and that's when it all went to hell, isn't
it? Yeah. Email, and then cell phones came in, and then. And then later on, the devices started merging. So there's a point in time where different communication channels, you had to use different devices. If you wanted to make a phone call, you had to use a phone. If you wanted to, do pages, you had to use your pager. If you wanted to use your email, you had to log into your email account on your computer. Time where, for limited video conferencing, you had to go use a video conferencing machine or system. And what's happened is a lot of these technologies have now merged where people's smartphones are become a single device that does everything. It's a phone, it's a text message machine, it's, with a lot of the new phones, you can actually do video conferencing on them, you can surf the web, you can do everything. So they've become sort of an all-in-one device, and in a way that's handy because, less things to carry around, but it also means that you're less focused often when you're using the device because you can start to do one thing on it and very quickly switch over and do something else.
It was a different world when we had to carry all those devices around.
Absolutely.
So things have definitely become more convenient, but one of the questions I've asked is it that we are actually more productive. Because convenience is not the same as productivity.
Yeah, I agree.
Although there are some who say, hey, I can be in the bathroom doing all sorts of things while I'm sending a text message or listening to a YouTube video. I was like, well, it's convenient, but are you really more productive?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a big difference between convenience and productive, and I think it's a big problem today. As a matter of fact, you mentioned Albert Einstein earlier, and Albert Einstein used to do things called deep thought experiments, where he would just ponder ideas or concepts and just reflect on them for days and sometimes weeks at a time, and just tried to visualize and imagine those situations. And that's actually how he came up with many of his breakthrough ideas. Is he when he talked about, imagine I'm a photon of light and I'm going through space, what happens to me? And he would just sit there and just ponder it. And it's those deep thinking and reflective moments that often result in breakthrough thinking. And today what I find is our days are so highly fragmented as a result often of convenient technology, which enables us to fragment our days, that it has made us less productive. We don't have time to think and reflect and strategize, where we're just simply responding to emails.
Right. So the convenience that we now have through mobility and putting all these devices into one, all the channels into one, means that we have a way higher possibility of being distracted. No?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And our attention being fragmented.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, I enjoy convenience. It definitely has a place, but it does have its downsides sometimes. I mean, when I was used to just sit at my desk and, I had a pile of paper and I could just focus on the paper. There didn't used to have the computer that could also start surfing the web, or an IM message would pop up, or a Skype call would come in, or the second I thought about something, I was like, oh, I can jump over here onto the internet and do something else the second I get a little bit fatigued. I used to sit and focus on that stack of work that had to be done.
So there were less channels. Do you think that if Einstein were around today, that he simply would, let's put it the other way, if he wanted to engage in a deep thought experiment, he'd have to rearrange his universe because the world, that the devices that we carry and the channels that are taken for granted, that we assume are the ones you have to use, they actually militate against going into a deep thought experiment, don't they?
Absolutely. I mean, Einstein was famous for, having only, one identical suits in his closets, so he would never have to, spend a lot of time thinking about what to wear. He was famous for riding bicycles around and not worried about, learning to drive or things like that. So he kept his life in some ways very simple, so that he had the time to focus on his intellectual exercises.
Yeah, and if he were around today, he'd be fiddling with, why isn't my Twitter update updating my Facebook page at the same time it's updating my blog, and why isn't the hashtag connected to Facebook, and blah 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 blah.
Yeah, I mean, you could spend a huge amount of your time working on things that are busy, but not ultimately productive. And that's, I think, where we have a lot of employees today that, because of technology and technology convenience, are busy, but not necessarily, as you mentioned, productive.
And so are we then in some kind of trouble? I mean, if we have sort of accepted a world in which deep thought experiments are harder to set up than before, So they're more difficult. And if you and I now have, at any given moment, anywhere 24/7, 10 channels available to us, whereas, as you rightly said, when we sat down to do work, we had maybe two back in the day. We had paper and we had maybe a phone. And before that, we didn't even have a phone. So are we setting ourselves up for a certain kind of mediocrity just by accepting the status quo in terms of all these channels?
You know, it's an interesting question, and there definitely has been a shift. I mean, when I look back, there was back in the 80s, two researchers, Richard Daft and Robert Langle, developed what's called the information richness continuum, based on information richness theory, and they kind of laid out back, and this is back in the early mid 80s, a continuum of media that moved from what they deemed kind of a low rich media to a high richness media, and they're actually looking at a printout of their original research paper. Their low richness media started with things like computer printout and written reports. And then as it kind of moved to higher rich media, it moved over to email and telephone, and then eventually face-to-face discussions as kind of the most rich sort of interaction you could have in a communication channel. So, they had, probably identified four or five sorts of media back then, and obviously we have added a great number since that time. Mm-hmm. We've added instant messaging and texts. Mm-hmm. Social networks have become huge, discussion boards, real-time video chats have mm-hmm. been added, and now we're even having what I call multiple, they have Google Hangouts have now become a whole new sort of environment where people that's a very new and exciting environment in some ways, and so. But what I've seen is that some of the older media has definitely fallen off. There's been a shift. So mm-hmm. we mentioned the telephone, and that's definitely taken a large reduction in use. Mm-hmm. Things like written reports mm-hmm. have certainly had a big reduction, and as well as, believe it or not, face-to-face discussions have greatly reduced. With mm-hmm. more people are now working virtually, working remotely, there's less face-to-face interaction. I kind of laugh sometimes because in my company, we sometimes have conference calls, and it used to be people would get together in a room together and meet for mm-hmm. meetings. Mm-hmm. Often they'll have conference calls, and people will just be sitting in their cubes or their offices, literally next to each other, but they won't leave their offices because they can just use the convenience of going online and joining a conference call or a video chat. Mm-hmm. They don't even mm-hmm. they've losing that interaction. So there's definitely a shift in media usage. What I think there hasn't been is a understanding of the need for organizations to really invest in training on these medias.
Yeah. No. Why do we need training? Because all these things are so simple. You could just teach yourself, right?
Well,
you could just just follow a YouTube video and you can figure out how to tweet. Follow another YouTube video. You can figure out how to use Instagram. Follow another one, Snapchat, and so all of them are easy. Why do you need training? They're not that tough to figure out, right?
Well, the problem is they're easy to use, but they're also easy to misuse. So email is probably one of the ones that I like to focus on. It's probably my area of biggest focus for my research activities. Is it's a great media. I mean, it's fast, it's efficient, it's traceable, it's auditable from a business perspective. Mm-hmm. It allows me to communicate with people, team members around the world, and get responses, no matter where I am, when I'm traveling on business, it's very, very effective for that. But it's also highly misused. And if you look at, employees are probably spending 30, 40, some 50% of their days in email. It, brings me to several years ago, one of my kids asked me, what do you do for a living, Dad? Because at some point your kids try to figure out what their parents actually do for a living. And I was going to try to explain I'm in supply chain and logistics and compliance and try to explain that all. And I kind of looked at my son and I said, I do email. And he said, what? I said, right. And he said, what? He says, yeah, now that I think about it, I do email for a living. I say, I come into work and I answer a lot of emails and I send a lot of emails. And if there's less emails than when at the end of the day than when I came in, it was a good day. And if there's more emails than when I came in, it was a bad day.
And did he say, I want to be a fireman?
Yeah, I don't think he quite got it. But it was kind of an epiphany to me that's really what I spend. That's not the only thing I do, but it was a huge part of my day. And a lot of people, it is a big part of their day, and I think, corporations and businesses, I don't think, have realized how much time and misuse is being done over various media. And you're right, they are easy to use, but they're not always used well. And I talk about sometimes the back and forth that goes with people where they're copying multiple people and take that situation where there's 10 people on a conversation and 6 people keep responding to other people and you'll have 20, 30, 40, 50 emails going back and forth over an item that should probably be resolved by one phone call.
Are you therefore saying that the training should focus on, if it's email training, on how to use that particular channel effectively? We all have been witnessed email wars where, two people are having some kind of dispute and one copies, all of his or her department members and allies, and then the other person responds, copying all the original ones plus a whole bunch more, and then after a couple of days, the entire workforce in a location or in a company or in a building is all being copied on some inane matter that's being bounced between two people. Just need to meet, but instead they're having this email war that involves everyone, and it's like watching a fight and waste time. So training to not do things like that, right?
Absolutely. So yeah, that's interesting. They call it, flaming people. They call them flame wars. There's a term used by researchers I read used the term called cyber incivility, which I kind of liked.
Nice.
Where
word.
Yeah,
cyber. I'm writing that one down.
Cyber incivility, and that's where people will often react through electronic means in ways that they would never react face-to-face or in person. And it's just interactions that just somehow violate the workplace norms and mutual respect that you would never react that way in person.
Mm-hmm.
I learned that many years ago when one of my jobs was managing a help desk for a company, and I was managing the technology help desk, and every now and then I'd get some screaming voicemail from some executive having problems with his computer and very upset and going on and on. And what I learned very quickly is you didn't call him back. I would get up, walk over, go to his office, knock on his door, and say, hey, I hear you're having some problems. Face to face.
Did I just? Yeah. Is that you, Michael? Thanks for coming. And I did feel really embarrassed.
Absolutely, right? And you could see their entire demeanor and change as soon as you were face to face with them, and you're like, I'm here to help. What can I help you with? And all of a sudden, all that vitriol, all that anger would very quickly subside, and you could almost see the color come out of their face. And I said, it's where you need to work with people face to face. But
it, so you did a channel switch is what you did.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I could, you know, that happens often with messages. I could sense after a couple of back and forths that if something's going badly, it's time to pick up the phone or set up a video chat, or if somebody's in the area, walk down the hall and talk to them. Because in person, you have the ability to regulate tone and regulate feedback. When you're firing messages back and forth, it creates a very sometimes uncivil situation.
Uh-huh. So here's what I hear you saying now. So I don't think I've ever heard anyone say it before, is that you need to be judicious. And I think you're also suggesting that we actually get trained in which channels to use when and under what circumstances we need to switch channels in order to achieve some business objective.
Absolutely. It's what I like to call using the right media for the right types of communications.
And do you offer like a one-day training on which media to use for which situation and when to switch so that you can accomplish your objectives?
Yeah.
Tell us,
yeah. Well, I do have, you know, part of the research I did, I actually performed email efficiency training within my company, and part of the training was teaching people how to use the right media for the right types of situations and using alternate media where appropriate. You know, I always say, you know, email's efficient, but it's not the appropriate media for all interactions. It's sometimes used for people just to avoid interactions. It's
to hide behind.
To hide behind, right? It's very poorly suited for dispute resolutions. So if you have disputes with people, email is not the way to do it. It should never.
Don't you hate that guy who does that? Sends that email and hides behind it. And Michael, I'd like to offer you some feedback. You just want to kill it, right?
Absolutely. It also, you know, there's no ability to, you know, regulate tone or
right.
get sense of things. You know, language can very easily be misinterpreted over emails, and even simple sentences can come across as being sarcastic or hostile, often when they're not even intended that way. I've had some of my messages over the years taken ways that I never intended them to be, and I always said, no, that's not what I meant. But then when you read it, you're like, well, I guess you could read it that way.
Yeah, I've noticed also that using my smartphone, my emails are shorter.
Yep.
And they sound, after I've, you know, looked at them again, they sound a little bit snappy. And it's just because my fingers just can't move around the keyboard as quickly as it can a laptop keyboard.
Absolutely. And
I don't put as many words. Comes out like I'm being impatient or something.
Yeah, and actually those, you know, on my smartphone, I turned off the auto spell feature because every now and then it would create a sentence that would not be the sentence I intended by substituting words. And that could create some big problems.
That sure can.
But, you know, you know,
channel starts to put in words you didn't intend. Ooh.
Absolutely. But, you know, never substitute email for a necessary face-to-face meeting or even a phone call where you can regulate the conversation, gauge feedback, and sense a person's emotion and tone. And you just can't do that over email. It's just not an effective way to do that.
I'm fairly sure that there is no training being conducted on a regular basis for employees of companies on how to do exactly that.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. I mean, there are a few that do, but it is very rare. You know, as a matter of fact, Nathan Zeldis, who's the president of the Information Overload Research Group, and he was a big pioneer at Intel for many years before he left and has kind of gone on his own, actually, you know, built a big training program at Intel around email and media use. And, you know, he was way ahead of his time, but it's not used in, you know, that kind of approach is really not followed in most companies. People are brought into the company. They presume that they know how to use email, and they do know how to use it, but they don't know how to use it effectively or
appropriately.
Yeah.
And I guess that would extend to in two areas. One is a mode of communication, and the other as a way of managing time demands. Both areas receive no training, and I guess the assumption is that the employee will somehow figure it out on their own, right? Good luck.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's not just, like you said, the appropriate media, but people also do what I call, they do bad email. So quality and structure problems with email messages, subject lines that are vague or don't pertain to the issue, long rambling messages. I get messages sometimes which I call them wall of words emails. They're just a wall of words, and they're unreadable, and you know, especially for a lot of people now using, you know, little smartphones, you get something that's more than, you know, a couple of sentences long, and you know, it's you can't read it.
It's a burden. As you're trying to scroll up, and it doesn't quite scroll fast enough, and then
absolutely,
you got to try and reload the screen, and then it doesn't load the entire. And before you know it, 10 minutes have gone, and you're trying to read one email.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, email's great for short, organized, action-oriented messages that, you know, are highlighting key things that need to happen, that are straightforward, that aren't subject to a lot of ambiguity. You know, as long as you keep it professional and cordial and avoid, any sort of, questionable messages and or, you know, avoid things that are difficult or topics that could create, conflict. It's a great media, but outside of that, no, there's other media we should be using.
But even then, I mean, that sounds, it sounds easy, but for example, I don't even know what Snapchat is. I barely know what Snapchat is. I presume it's some kind of video, something or the other way of talking to other people, kind of like Skype, but I don't know the difference. So I haven't even looked into it, and I obviously don't use it. How does any professional figure out what is possible through new channels? I don't even think that there, I don't even know what the presumption is nowadays. When a new channel gets created, like Instagram or Snapchat or anything else, is there an unsaid assumption that we should all learn how to use all of them as soon as they come out and then somehow figure out how to use them appropriately? Is that, how do we even navigate the ones that are new? Do we just try them out and see what works? Maybe you can shed some light. What's the expectation and what's your recommendation?
Yeah, it's a good question. And, you know, you mentioned Snapchat, and I'm personally not too familiar with it. I think it's a way to just record little teeny video messages and kind of send them out. They're like little tiny few second messages that are video messages, and it's a way to send like a little snippet to somebody. And, you know, that could actually, you know, could be handy. You know, it's just, I guess it would show up and it'd be, hey, this is Mike, and just want to tell you something real quick. And it's a little picture of me doing something, you know, maybe demonstrating something. So could be useful. But you're right. We are definitely being inundated with new technologies all the time. I mean, you know, you have people now walking around with Google glasses, right, that are, you know, seeing things in real time and even overlaying information over what they see. So it is a complicated world, but I think we need to sometimes step back a little bit and say what we need to do isn't that complicated. We don't need to overcomplicate things and focus on a few clear communication channels that we need for our types of businesses. And, you know, it's probably different for personal versus business. You know, I use text messages personally, you know, between, you know, within my family and within my kids as a way to communicate with them. And that's kind of the way, but I don't use text messages for work. Mm-hmm. And I don't want people text messaging me at work. You know.
But that makes sense. You have some rules, it sounds like, that you set up for yourself with respect to usage.
Absolutely. So, you know, I use, you know, I focus on, you know, primarily email for work, face-to-face and, you know, and then either conference calls or video conferences for more complex areas. And what I try to do is anytime I have a situation where I see more than three or four or five back-and-forth emails occurring, I will send out a message and say, let's set a meeting. Stop the messaging and set a meeting. And it could be a conference call or a video conference, depending on, you know, I've set up those kind of escalated media roles where, you know, my normal communication for most people would be either emails or occasionally phone, although I don't get a lot of phone calls these days. And then I would, as things get more complex, move up to conference calls, video conferences, in-person meetings. And that works pretty well for my work. And then there's a few situations where within the company we have like discussion boards or kind of boards of where we can post information and have back and forth communications. Those actually work very nicely, and I think for a lot of companies are highly underutilized. You know, it's a great way to put out information and have interactive communications. It really goes back to the day of the old, you know, that's the old bulletin board services, right?
Right. I have a sort of real time example of that going on with in my life right now, if I could share.
Sure.
I set up about 12 years ago, 13 years ago, I set up a community called Carib HR Forum. It's a gathering of HR professionals across the Caribbean region. And it started off with 10 people. I'm the founder and instigator, I guess. And now it's up to 600.
Wow.
And over time, people's behavior, I noticed, has changed. And we all used to communicate through a mailman discussion list. We still do. That's the primary mode of communication. There's a smaller list on LinkedIn. And I also have a radio show, which is just like a podcast. And there's also a website. The website gets very few comments now because comments have dropped off. As a channel of communication, comments have just dropped off radically over the last year or two.
Right.
And then what I noticed is that the volume of conversations through the primary channel, the discussion list, have dropped. Now, I think that's what's happening overall. So what I did was I said, okay, I think there are people who don't want to be a part of a 600-person conversation because it can get pretty bulky. And I'm going to set up a mailing list, separate mailing list, for people who just want updates. But I'm scratching my head. I'm wondering, am I doing the right thing by creating this extra channel and encouraging people to move off the discussion list and into this other channel where they only get email updates? Am I causing the demise of this community?
Right.
Because, you know, if you change the communication structure and encourage a new one, you could split it up into two small bits that are too small to maintain themselves, lose critical mass, and before I know it, there's nobody on. Where do I find the rules?
Yeah, it's difficult, and
tell me.
Yeah, it's difficult, and you know, even for my little website that I manage, my little email overload solution site, you know, I don't get a lot of interaction through you know, comments on the site, but I do get some emails, and I get some interaction from some people on Twitter. You know, and that seems to be a way that you know, some people are kind of keeping up to date with things and communicating. But you're right, there's a lot of different channels, and there's people using Twitter, there's people using Facebook, there's people using LinkedIn, and you know, there's people on the, you know, just making comments on the websites themselves. So, you know, what's the best way and where do you want to focus your time? Because frankly, you know, even for anyone, as you know, especially us as, you know, kind of individuals that are trying to get a message out there, it's very time consuming to be on all these different channels, monitor them, deal with the different technology and use of all of them, and try to stay up. Is, you know, now I have to monitor a Facebook page and a Twitter feed and a LinkedIn page and a website comment system and my emails, and it is really in some ways you know, overload in that way, where, you know, would we be better off just picking one channel that seems to resonate the best for your audience and just focusing on that? You know, for example, if you find people are not using your comments but are interacting through an email newsletter, maybe that's the right answer for your community. There may be different communities that are much more focused on Facebook interaction, and maybe that's the right way to do that. For example, I've actually recently thought about just shutting down my Facebook, my business-related Facebook page, because, you know, I put posts there, but I get almost no interaction.
Mm-hmm.
It's like not even worth my time to maintain it.
Mm-hmm. Me too. Yeah. One thing I have noticed, and this is away from the community question and back to a personal question, is that one thing everyone needs or should have or would ideally have is something like an emergency channel.
Yeah.
So I know that there are, I think on the broadcast airwaves, they've set aside a part of the spectrum for emergency communication. So when there's an earthquake or a hurricane or a fire, that if they need to use this part of the spectrum to communicate, they can. And it's not polluted with every other person trying to send their cousin a CB message or what have you. So that makes sense. There's part of the spectrum set aside for that. But in our world, our lives, what do you think of the idea of us having a way for people to contact us in an emergency, so that if we have 10 channels or 15 or 20, 10 all possible ways of being communicated with, that if we decide not to pay attention to 19, we know to pay attention to one. Kind of like, I know people put messages on their, their signatures,
right,
email signatures that say, basically says, I can be reached through Twitter, Facebook, email, LinkedIn. But if you have an emergency, call, and it's usually a human being, call my secretary.
Right.
And her name is Amy, and call her at this number, and she'll know how to contact me. So you have a person who acts as the emergency dispatcher.
Right.
So she knows to dispatch Michael in an emergency. If it's a real emergency, or if it's just someone who just wants to get a hold of you, or someone who's abusing the channel. So there's a channel, which would be a phone call in this case, and then there's a person who is acting as the dispatcher. That model seems to work for many people who can afford it. But do we all need something similar where we all have a 911 kind of channel where, and is that a basic for all of us? Because all of us have emergency needs. We all have people who, if they have an emergency, we want them to be able to contact us immediately. But that doesn't come built in at all.
Yeah.
Someone could try all the 19 wrong channels and never reach us, right?
Absolutely. And you're,
how do we survive?
you're right. And of course, I can take a throwback to, you know, when I was growing up is, you know, we didn't have email. We didn't have cell phones. We didn't have computers. We had at most telephones, right? Mm-hmm. And those are when they were around. And frankly, you know, I guess maybe we didn't have as many emergencies back then. It seems that we have a lot more emergencies today than we used to. Of course, I would question what a lot of these emergencies are today. But you're right. It is tough when people, you do want them to be able to reach you, and you could be in a lot of different places. Or, you know, I travel for business. Sometimes it can be hard to get me. You know, my family, you know, usually knows, you know, my cell phone, and they know how to usually contact me. But there are some nice services. There's a service, a member of the Information Overload Research Group has something called AwayFind is one such service.
Heard of it, yes.
Yeah. And yes, what that does is, it's an interesting service. I looked at it. You do have to pay for it, so it is a paid service. But what that does is provides a special way when somebody has a really urgent situation where they can actually go into, click on this link, I guess, and put in, hey, I really need to speak to you, it's urgent, it's about this. And then the system goes through, I guess, a series of your communication channels that you've given to it to try to contact you. So the system may start out by, it'll call your cell phone. And then if you don't answer, it'll call your home phone. And then if you don't answer, it'll send you a text message. And then it might try to get you on, you know, right on Skype. And then if that doesn't work, maybe it'll send you a special email message with, you know, a special a special subject line. So that's kind of a, you know I've looked at that a little bit, and there are, I think, systems like that out there and that you could do, and that is something I could see for people that have a lot of different communication media that you can give out to people and say, hey, if it's really urgent, you know, here's a system that's got the best chance of being able to locate me wherever I may be.
Mm-hmm. It escalates, I guess,
exactly,
from one channel to the next.
Exactly. It probably follows
in a systematic way.
Exactly. It must have, you know, I think you put in a kind of a hierarchy of communication channels and ways to try to contact you and get a message to you. So
it's an automatic dispatcher then, I guess.
Yeah, really. Back to the old days where, yeah, you'd have an operator that'd probably have, you know, try to hunt you down, right?
Right. Well, that's a good lead into what I think would be my final sort of set of tricky questions to throw at you.
Okay.
We're short of answers in this area in general, and you know, to have you on is great because you've pre-thought and figured out so many of them. But here's a thought experiment, a la Einstein.
Okay.
In this case. So an alien is coming from a different planet, and he contacts you, and he says, I understand that on Earth there are many, many communication channels. What rules should I use to decide between channels? And what's motivating my question is, I would think everyone needs an emergency channel or some kind of protocol. So everyone needs that one.
Right.
Everyone needs a means for someone who they care about to contact them in an emergency. So that's a basic. But then, how would you advise this alien with respect to setting up his current day channels?
Yeah, that's good. I'd say when you have complicated topics, when you want to try to persuade somebody, when you want to have a conversation that may be difficult or result in emotional feedback from the person, face-to-face is always the number one channel that you should use for those. There is just no substituting a face-to-face conversation, the ability to gauge that back and forth, look at facial, facial expressions, look at tone, look at emotion and be able to understand, you know, body language and that nuance that goes on in face-to-face communication. So I'd say for anything like that, I'd always recommend face-to-face.
Great.
Otherwise, complex topics, but that might not be as emotionally charged, I'd say a phone call would or a voicemail message would be fine. You know, typically a phone call if there's going to require back-to-back or a voicemail message where you might want to relay some tone, but you're not going to look for, you know, a lot of interaction.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say short informational messages that are often time-sensitive and need to be read and possibly retained, email messages are probably the most ubiquitous form right now to go with for people. So, formal communications.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still a little old school. I like a good old letter sometimes. Mm-hmm. You know, it's kind of funny as talk about me on my kids these days. You know, they don't write letters anymore, but I always make them, like when it gets their birthdays and they get, you know, gifts or things like that, I make them write thank you letters. And you'd think I'm, like, torturing these kids.
With a pen.
Yeah, pen and paper and...
Paper.
Yeah, pen and a note and a notepad and write a little thank you and, you know, send your grandparents a little letter. I mean, they'd always say, can I just send her a text or can I send an email? It's like, no, you're going to write a letter.
And they won't get it if you send them a text.
They won't get it if. And you think I'm torturing the kids by asking them to actually write a little note. But it is there is something nice about getting a written note. That is nice. And then very informal, quick exchanges between people of just questions and queries and fast and informal. I'd say text messages or IMs or computer chats are very effective. So I try to follow that that exchange. And then things that aren't time sensitive, or you might have complex topics that are more technical in nature and require people to review and think about and give feedback and have interchange. I actually like things like discussion boards. Sort of things where people can post a topic and people can kind of look at them and give ideas and give feedback and have almost an iterative sort of community response to something. I think discussion boards can be very, very powerful and are probably an area, aren't used as much as they should be, especially in the business environment.
Mm-hmm.
So that'd be my recommendations to the alien.
Well, the alien thanks you.
Great.
And he has one more question.
Sure.
And here's what he wants to know. Because he's heard our conversation, apparently, and he's convinced that today's advice is going to have to be updated like next week when someone comes up with some brand new technology, like a Wayfind, for example.
Right.
So under what conditions should he change his... You basically laid out a protocol for him and some specific recommendations. Under what conditions should he change his protocol? Should he scour the world, for example, for fresh technology and attempt to replace his setup with the one that you're recommending, option A? Or should he analyze his current setup and look for flaws or holes or possible errors, and then look for incremental improvements or even technological improvements? Or should he do both? What do you think?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't think we should ever stop looking for new technologies and ways to do things better and more effectively. Although, when it comes to communication, I think the technology may change, but the actual communication is still fairly uniform. I mean, you have a message that you want to communicate between a transmitter and a receiver, right? I mean, that gets back to good old communication theory. You have a communication channel, a message going between a transmitter and a receiver, and over that channel you could potentially have noise, right? I mean, that's back to real basic communication theory. So we may find new media that lets us communicate faster or more quickly, and always media that can reduce noise is always good. But I think we have plenty of channels. I actually think in some ways we have too many channels. I think what we should do is focus on using less channels and using the ones we really need to use more effectively. I mean, if something better comes along, I think we should, as always, we look at it. Obviously, things like text messages and IMs, I mean, they didn't exist, probably what, much more than 10, 15 years ago, and they've certainly exploded. And, today, young people today communicate very heavily with, text messages and IMs. They do that much more than even talking on cell phones. So it is the way that a lot of the, Generation Xers and Generation Yers, communicate these days. So I do think we need to balance them both, but I really think we do have a plethora of media channels, and in some ways we may be fine just to use the ones we have and just use what we have more efficiently.
Alien has one last. He's poking me in the ribs, and he has one more question, I guess.
Okay.
Is there something like a checklist or a diagnostic tool that we could use to analyze our current our current channels, how we're using them with a view to streamlining, simplifying, optimizing, keeping it tight, getting rid of the ones that cause trouble, getting rid of the ones that we don't need, boosting up our emergency channel, anything like that anywhere in the world?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, as part of the training course I did, I did make what I call a media selection matrix, which is kind of a way that lists some of the key media, when you use them, and some of the key traits. I didn't work it backwards and make a diagnostic where I would actually ask people how they communicate and then kind of provide feedback to try to improve that. So that's actually, I think that'd be a good project to do, is just to actually make some sort of diagnostic where people can kind of put in how they communicate today, because then they can get feedback about what they're doing effectively and not effectively. So every time you just kind of show somebody and say, hey, here's the right way to do it, that's kind of prescriptive, but it's also good sometimes to give people feedback in terms of, well, what are they doing right today? Because they may be doing some things that are fine and just need to focus on changing a few areas. And, I know in your book you did a lot of that in terms of focusing on diagnostics and moving people on a continuum of improvement. So, yeah, that'd be a nice
little
project to work on.
I'm a diagnostic junkie, yes. Quite true. But tell me something. If I promise to bring you back on the show when you have this diagnostic tool completed, will you get it done like in the next few months?
I'll give it
Make
a try.
You a deal?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll give it a try. Yeah, no, I actually think it'd be a great little project to work on.
Okay, yeah. Podcast listeners, you heard it. Promise some Michael Einstein, who is no relation to Albert Einstein that we have verified so far, but is an original thinker, is going to take on the business of creating a diagnostic tool for analyzing our current set of channels with a view to optimizing them, cutting out all of the ones we're not using, taking out all the mischief, and giving us a whole new sense of relief, of peace of mind, and productivity. Am I saying that properly?
Yeah, this is making it a bit tall order for me, though. I'm a little nervous right now. you're talking about peace and harmony here. I'm not sure I can achieve that.
That's what we want from you.
Might be able to make people a little more effective in their days.
Okay. Well, I'll.
But peace. I'll take peace. I'll take. Effective. Yeah. I'll take peace and harmony if it comes also.
Oh, great. We'll even take the little bit of improvement that you're offering there and take that to the bank, because the fact is we're as you said at the beginning of the show, we are misusing our channels, and we really don't have a way of gaining insight into what we do. So basically anything that you offer could be potentially groundbreaking and a benefit to all of us. Michael, you've been such a great sport. How can people contact you? Because they're going to want some more from the channel expert guy.
Okay, great. Well, thanks so much. Probably the best way to get me is through my website, which is emailoverloadsolutions.com, www.emailoverloadsolutions.com. That's my website. You could also email me at michael@emailoverloadsolutions.com. And on my website, you'll also find I have links to my Twitter feed and my Facebook page. Those are not major sources for me, so I'd say best place is through my website. I do have posts I put up there, or feel free to email me. Always happy to exchange ideas with other people and increase the dialogue of people trying to improve our communication channels.
Great. Fantastic. Michael Einstein, thanks for being our guest here at the Two Time Labs podcast. Keep listening. Michael, thank you so much.
All right. Thank you so much, Francis.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Two Time Labs podcast. And a big thank you to Michael Einstein for spending time with us this week. Don't forget, you can pick up a copy of my book, Perfect Time-Based Productivity, either on Amazon.com or at my website, perfect.mytimedesign.com. Take care and talk to you next time. All the best.